Saturday with Colm O'Mungon on RTÉ Radio 1.
I don't know why, but I want to meet him in a safe space and look him in the eyes and ask him what reason would anyone have to be so cruel to a young woman. I want to know if he believes his own lies. I want him to truly see me and be forced to see himself as monstrous as I saw him. Those are the words of a Spanish tourist this week in her victim impact statement at the sentencing hearing of Christopher O'Grady, who raped her on New Year's Eve in 2019. Restorative justice is available to victims in Ireland, but how much is known about it and how much is it used? Earlier, I spoke to Alva Griffith, herself a victim of rape, who met her perpetrator. And I started by asking her about the night she was attacked. And again, we should just repeat, listener discretion is advised.
I was working at a job in town many years ago at this point. And one night I was coming home on public transport, as I did many nights previously. And an individual got on the bus and sat beside me for the duration of my bus journey. And then once I got off the bus, that person followed me and subsequently ambushed me. I was actually only 4 minutes from like the bus stop to my house. So at the time, I hadn't really expected much danger. But he followed me, as I mentioned, ambushed me, and then essentially was very physically violent towards me. And also, I was a victim of a sexual assault. So, and actually, at the end of the offence, you know, it wasn't so much that the man ran away. I actually was rescued by two young men that actually happened across me and the perpetrator when he was essentially dragging me along a road, and they kind of intervened, shouted, you know, what, are you okay? And I said, I screamed no. And then the perpetrator ran off. And very, very fortunately for me, because this person wasn't actually from the locality, those young men chased him and held him down, and they called the Gardaí at that time.
And because he was caught there, following the intervention of those two men, you went to court, your attacker, perpetrator, pleaded guilty. So what happened next in terms of a trial and the process that followed?
Yeah, I mean, I will always say that upon reflecting back, I realised that I had the very best experience you can have as a victim of crime, in that, as you mentioned, he did plead guilty. There was a really good sentence, you know, by our jurisdictional standards. And, you know, I had a great experience with the Gardaí. I thought they were lovely people and felt very supported by them. So, you know, it doesn't get much better than that. And at the end of it, I just felt like I didn't feel there was full healing or closure or resolve for me at that point. I felt it was more like an official stamp from the state saying, you know, this man has wronged you. My feeling is that really at the core of that was that the whole criminal justice process for me felt very much, obviously, as it is in actuality, that it's very offender focused, you know. It's really about the crime that took place, and the person at the centre of that is the offender. It's really not the victim. And I think that was something that I felt very strongly. Just a very brief practical example of that is, I remember when I attended one of the kind of court appearances, and I was sitting outside in the car, and one of the Gardaí came over, and he knocked on the window, and I opened it, and he said, "You know, Alva, you don't need to be here." And he meant it in the best possible way, like it was coming from a very good place. But I was thinking, I'm so unimportant in this process that I don't even need to be here. And yet it was me that was kind of suffering the kind of psychological turmoil, you know. So
because you were left, Alva, with those lingering questions, feelings, trying to heal, trying to take your power back, find closure, you decided years later to engage in the restorative justice process. Were you nervous entering into that and the possibility of sitting face to face with your attacker?
It was over time that I developed this, I suppose, need and realization that I felt a need to encounter him again in some way. I had questions that kept rolling around in the back of my mind. I had things that I wanted to say to him. And underpinning all of that really was this I think it was essentially a need to kind of re-empower myself, you know. So I was speaking to my sister one day and I said, you know, I really, really want to meet this man again. And she said, it sounds a lot like a thing called restorative justice. And it was then that I reached out to Dr. Marie Keenan from UCD and we kicked off a process.
And you got to ask questions of your attacker in that face-to-face time, get some answers. How did you feel coming away from that whole process? Did it achieve what you had hoped for? Did it give you closure? Did it help with healing?
It absolutely did. I think mine, I would say, was very life-altering in the most positive of ways. Because, you know, before when I used to think back to the crime, before the restorative process, I used to kind of have this feeling of being disempowered and I kind of would raise a lot of anger and, you know, I felt very dehumanized by the experience. But through the process itself and sitting opposite the man and looking him in the eye and saying what I wanted to say and us interacting in a very human way, it actually kind of left me after the restorative process, left me with the feeling of being very empowered and very much in control and humanized.
I imagine with moments like that, the question that must dominate is the why. Why me? Why then? Why this person? Were you able to get closer to the why he did what he did when he did it and to you through the restorative justice process?
That was one of the questions that I did want to ask the man. I wanted to ask him, you know, why did you do it? Why did you do it to me? I also wanted to ask him if he intended to kill me, given the nature of how I essentially was rescued. And I did get an answer. You know, there's obviously a whole process around restorative justice, like there's preparation meetings and stuff. And so, you know, the perpetrator, the person that harmed, will know that you're going to ask that question. And it was something that, in a way, maybe I'd already known, but I actually wanted to hear it come from his mouth, you know. And he let me know that, you know, at the time, you know, he was out drinking and, you know, he'd felt some rejection from women. And he saw me walk by and I was wearing heels. And then he said, like, I saw red, you know. So then he pursued me. And that was, you know, very clear to me. It wasn't so much about the clothing, by the way, but I think it's symbolic to kind of his hostility and resentment towards women. So that helped. You know, I never kind of thought it would be a very clear-cut, logical answer, but it was more, that's what that man was thinking at the time, and that gives me closure to know that.
Dr. Ian Marder, Associate Professor in Criminology at Maynooth University, and their Restorative Justice Officer, you've been listening to Alva Griffith there bravely telling her story again and the benefits of the restorative justice programme. She describes it there in her own words, life-altering, but it's generally underutilised. Is that fair to say in Ireland when you look at the data and the numbers?
Yeah, definitely. So we have, as part of a project to try and support the development of restorative justice in Ireland, we've been tracking the number of cases that are referred to restorative justice providers each year since 2019. And what we've found is that year on year, it seems that less than 1% of people potentially suitable, people in potentially suitable situations have been offered restorative justice. So, I mean, it's important to say that this is voluntary for all parties. And it needs to be assessed. You know, it needs to make sure that people give their informed consent, that they know what's happening going into it. There's a huge amount of preparation that goes into it. So just because a referral is made doesn't mean that restorative justice is even going to happen. But the vast, vast majority of people are not even informed in a meaningful way and offered the opportunity to participate in this.
Are there some types of cases, Ian, that are better utilised under restorative of justice? What are the general instances you see of being used, maybe from burglary to manslaughter?
Well, I'd say that victims' rights dictate that there should be equality of access. So no one should be barred from participating or from being considered for participating in restorative justice because of the type of offence. Now, that being said, there's all sorts of groups of situations where this could be particularly valuable. As Alva said, you know, sometimes the more harm that is done, the more potential there is for restorative justice to support victim recovery. But it depends on the type of crime, on the point in the criminal justice process at which it's being used. And so, I mean, there's benefits here potentially for victims of crime, but also in terms of the potential to de-escalate people. So say that someone is maybe potentially on the cusp of imprisonment, you could use restorative justice in between conviction and sentencing and potentially participate in all of those kind of desistance and rehabilitation informed things while also simultaneously meeting the needs of the victim. And that might mean that the person potentially doesn't have to go to prison. It might be a more constructive series of outcomes than had they been sent to prison.
There's been a lot of commitments through the years, program for governments, justice action plans. We see most recently there's new targets set out by the probation service now to try and increase the number of cases referred by the courts by something like 10% every year for the next 3 years. Do you think that's achievable? What will it take to see an increase like that in terms of maybe resourcing and training that's required in the system?
Yeah, the targets are valuable, and there has been some small investment in expanding restorative justice to different parts of the country where it hasn't really been available, and also across the probation service. So, I mean, the targets are achievable, but only because we're starting from an extremely, extremely low starting point. So increasing the number of cases by 10 or 20%, you know, we're talking in the low hundreds each year. So, I mean, that's in a circumstance where there's like a quarter of a million of cases that go through the district court. There's thousands and thousands of cases that the probation service experience each year. You know, there's hundreds of thousands of victims who, even if restorative justice were increased by an order of magnitude, still would not be really given that opportunity to decide if restorative justice is right for them.
Dr. Ian Marder there, and earlier you heard from Alva Griffith. And if you've been affected by Alva's story, you can find advice at rshe.ie/helplines. And listening to all of that is our political panel, Fianna Fáil's Niall Collins, Labour's Laura Harman and Sinn Féin's Matt Carthy. And Minister, to come to you first, I think you recently met with the probation service as part of your work in the Department of Justice. You heard Ian there talk about this is a low starting point. There needs to be a quality of access, but it needs to be resourced if these ambitious targets are going to be met. Was that your feeling coming away from your meeting with them?
Well, first of all, I think Ian gave a very fair overview and summation. And I'm also, I want to commend Alva and also say that I'm happy to hear that her experience of restorative justice process has helped her, because the victim has to be central to all of this. And if, you know, as been outlined, it has to be voluntary participation. The victim has to be the centre of it. And, you know, to help the victim get past the event that they've experienced in their life. So I think restorative justice, I'm a supporter of it. I think it has a very valuable role to play within our criminal justice systems and processes, obviously for helping victims and by extension helping society and our community as a whole. Hopefully, if it's a successful process, by ensuring that the victim, that the harm doer or perpetrator of an offence or an assault or whatever it is, you know, will own up and take ownership and hopefully get that person into a place where they won't reoffend. So the numbers are low. There is a commitment within the programme for government, as you've rightly pointed out, Anya, to try and increase the interventions and the referrals by 10% year on year over the lifetime of the government. Restorative justice, it can be managed by the probation service, pre-sentencing, post-sentencing. It can be managed by An Garda Síochána, or it can be managed, and it is managed, or available through a series of what are called community-based organisations up and down the country which receive funding, and they're linked in, obviously, to their local court services and, you know, within An Garda Síochána and people interacting in the criminal justice system. Our funding to the probation service increased last year significantly, up to 60 million. It was an increase of 4 million to the probation service. I suppose they are central to all of this. But I do think it has a positive role to play. I visited a community-based organisation who engages in the Midlands in restorative justice processes, and met with the people who are at the coalface in relation to it. There's some great work done, but it is very, very challenging, mm-hmm. and no one size fits all. So they're difficult to manage, and as Dr. Ian has outlined, there has to be voluntary participation, and people have to know the type of process that they're going into and what they want to get out of it.
McCarthy, to bring you in there, Sinn Féin has a bill on this, I think, dating back to 2023. What's the status of that? Last time I looked, it seemed like it had been stuck at first stage, going to second stage. Are you trying to kind of get that back on the political agenda and prioritise? Might it receive cross-party support?
Yeah, it's in the what's called the legislative lottery. I'm actually the chair of the Oireachtas Justice Committee, and I actually hope that we, outside of that, can carry out a piece of work as a committee on a cross-party basis around the whole area of restorative justice, because it is underutilised in this state. The North are way ahead of us in terms of the use of restorative justice programmes. Part of the problem is the Minister has rightly commended the good work of community-based organisations, but there's a whole raft of geographical areas that would. So the things that we need to look at is, first of all, we need to come at this from the starting point, and I agree with the Minister on this, in terms of victim-centred. Not all victims will want to participate in a programme like this for understandable reasons. The second point is in respect of an acknowledgement that the prison system isn't working, particularly for what might be described as minor crimes, although those minor crimes can have a big impact. So to give you an example, in 2020 of all of those who served time who were under 20, 60% or above reoffended within 1 year. That tells you the current system isn't working.
Because there is a learning, isn't there, from Northern Ireland, where judges must refer most offences involving children to restorative justice before sentencing. And there's a lot of research there showing low levels of reoffending. Like, is that one of the key goals here through a piece of legislation?
And there's states across, some of the Scandinavian countries actually have a position where it's the reoffending rates are like in the single digits. So compared to where we are at the moment, that's not good for society. And we're dealing with a prison system that's overcrowded, where serious criminals and people who are actually posing a danger to society can't be in prison because there isn't enough spaces for them. And we've had the whole debacle around, you know, serious crimes being committed by those who are on bail. So restorative justice has a key part to play, but we have to, in the first instance, make sure the infrastructure is there. And that's what I'm saying. So the Probation Service have published their plan. There's 7 points to it. One of those points is in respect of ensuring that we have community-based organisations right across the state. But that's the only one of the 7 action plans that's subject to funding. So there's a question mark over it. So we need to lift that question mark as a first step.
Laura Harman, what would you like to see through more legislative measures like this and more government efforts through the Probation Service system?
Well, the Labour Party certainly supports that there should be more restorative justice, you know, measures in place. And certainly I think Alva's story there was very powerful and brave and a clear example of how it can work. And I think as well, if it can work for the offender in terms of, you know, if we can cut down on reoffending rates, I think it is very important, and certainly needs to be safe. It needs to be voluntary. But I think it's safe to say, you know, we know we have an epidemic of violence against women in this country. We know that 1 in 3 women during their lifetime will experience some form of domestic abuse, for example. We know from Women's Aid that over 40% of women who report these issues to the Gardaí have felt that they weren't satisfied with the response that they got. And actually, just during the week, our cross-party group in the Seanad of the Labour Party, the Social Democrats and the Green Party, we reintroduced the Domestic Violence Amendment Bill in the Seanad, for which Minister Collins was present for, and that passed committee stage. And that would include, you know, training for Gardaí on these issues, and it would also look at, you know, bail, taking into account previous offences. We saw a very powerful contribution from Senator Nicole Ryan and Sinn Féin making the case that, you know, an aggravating factor should be how it impacts on children as well. So we have a lot of work to do in this area, and, you know, certainly in terms of overcrowding in prisons. I mean, I know at the minute there are 80 inmates sleeping on the floor in the prison in Cork. So huge issues in relation to our justice system, but this is an important part of that. It can't be done on a piecemeal basis. It needs to be accessible for those that do want to pursue it.
Minister, you heard Matt talking about that 2023 bill. I think back, the government at that time didn't oppose it. If this did come back to second stage, got through the lottery, is this something that the government would row behind?
Well, I haven't seen his bill, to be honest, but I mean, any bill that's presented to the Oireachtas that has merit will get absolute full consideration from government. So I can't give a commitment in the here and now as to how or when it could proceed. But look, I think we're all on the same page in relation to the merits of restorative justice and the fact that it can play a really positive piece within our criminal justice system. That's the most overriding point. And I think certainly where you have a piece of legislation which has cross-party support, well, that's a good starting point.
We have one text message in. Thank you for sharing this. My experience of the restorative justice process as a victim was excellent. The facilitator appointed to me was very skilled and supportive. The programme should be further developed. We had one asking, can I ask as a matter of interest, did the offender gain anything through the process? Was there an incentive for him? And I think in terms of Alva's case, that wasn't the case in that she simply met her perpetrator after his sentence was served, and it was after a long, very thoughtful, intentional process where both sides understood what they could give, what was going to be discussed and asked in that meeting face to face. We're going to go to a break now. The panel is staying with us, and when we come back we'll be talking about Donald Trump's so-called Liberation Day, which is back at us again, and D-Day for the US trade tariffs this coming Wednesday.